psychology, relationship advice, and expert interviews every Wednesday. You're listening to the Ryan Answers Podcast with your host, counselor, author, and award-winning couples therapist, Ryan. Listen in for weekly tips from the top psychologists and relationship experts around the world. Want your relationship question answered on the show? Go to ryananswers.com/podcast to send it in. Are you ready? Here's Ryan.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Ryan here. Welcome back to the show. We're going to be talking about mental performance, the link between how you feel mentally and how you perform physically, and giving you guys a bunch of tips that you can use right away to up your mental performance, stay more focused, and get more done. And to enlighten us about all of this, I have on Dr. Chris Friesen, who is a neuropsychologist and the director of Friesen Performance. He's coming in to do that and to answer a bunch of reader questions as well, things you guys have sent in. You can send in yours at ryananswers.com/podcast. Thank you so much for coming on today, Dr. Friesen. I'm really excited to have you in here and to hear all the tips you have to offer everybody. Before we dive in, though, and get started, I'm a little bit curious about your history. Neuropsychology, obviously, being a pretty niche field. What inspired you? How did you get started in this as a career?
I started being interested in self-help when I was a teenager, actually. And I was a hockey goalie. I started a little bit late. I started when I was 12. As most people know, being a goalie is a pretty mental game. I wish I knew then what I know now, of course. Eventually, though, I realized I was not going to make a career out of this. And I read lots of books on not only mental skills, but also nutrition and physical activities and exercises. And I noticed these things really helped improve my game. And this sparked my interest in psychology. And so I started to read things, you know, when I was 15, 16 years old, like Tony Robbins, Stephen Covey, and that sort of thing. And that's what got me interested originally.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, actually, that being a goalie would be one of the more mental positions in sports. You see all these guys who are obviously very capable physically, but they go through all these hot and cold streaks. And I guess the same can be said for players, too, but it always seems to affect the people in that a lot more. And that works well then, actually, because our first question is hockey related. It comes from Stefan in Ajax, Ontario, who says, ask him about the brain's dark energy and how that affects things like zoning in on objects.
In sports psychology and in neuropsychology, we don't talk too much about the term dark energy, but I think he's referring to the default mode network, which is essentially an idling state in the brain. I think what this guy is referring to is the idea of being in the zone.
Do you have any advice on how to get into that state?
Definitely. And this is, when I work with athletes or other high achievers or high performers, this is what they want. Because we all know when we're in the zone, we perform our best. And there's a lot of psychological research on what the zone is. There's different terms for it as well. In sports, we call it the zone. Essentially, though, one of the main things that happens when you're in the zone is that you're really in the present moment. When your brain and your mind is thinking about the past or the future, even if that's seconds ago or seconds in the future, you're not fully in the moment and it's really hard to perform at your best. You have to remember your brain essentially has limited resources when it comes to attention and focus. And so if you're thinking about what it means if I win this competition, let's say in athletics, that is usually not a good thing because your brain is, part of your attention is focused somewhere else other than where it needs to be focused, which is what's happening immediately in front of you. But at the same time, keep in mind that the brain does that naturally. The question is, how often are we doing it? How quickly are we able to notice when our mind strays from where it should be focusing, and our ability to take the attention back to the present moment? And that's a trainable skill. One of the best ways, the cheapest way, is to actually do mindfulness meditation. There's no religious connotations. I look at it from a brain perspective. Essentially, the way I explain it to most athletes, it's basically brain training. Your goal is to become aware of your thoughts when they stray, because essentially with mindfulness meditation, you're focusing on your breathing. You're not controlling your breathing. You're simply breathing and focusing your attention on it. So the idea is you focus on your breathing when your mind strays. In other words, you think about, this is boring. What do I have to buy? I have to get some milk for later. Your brain will naturally do that. Your brain is a thought-producing machine, and it's doing what it's supposed to do. The idea is to accept those thoughts, allow them to be there, acknowledge them, don't repress them, and you also label them. You're saying, I'm having the thought that this is taking forever, or I'm having the feeling of anxiety, as opposed to saying, I'm anxious, or this is taking forever, because essentially the brain takes our thoughts as facts. So if we don't relabel them as, in terms of what they actually are, so if you say, I'm anxious, that's not a good thing because your brain will accept that as a fact and you'll probably get more anxious. But if you say, I'm feeling the sensations of anxiety, then you're labeling it for what it is because that's all it is. Anxiety is a temporary state. Then basically that allows the thought to basically go away. We call it diffusion. It's part of acceptance and commitment therapy and part of mindfulness training. So you let those thoughts, you diffuse from your thoughts. In other words, put space between you and the thought or the feeling by labeling it and acknowledging it. And then you bring your attention back to the present moment. When you do that, that's what I call rep number two. So rep number one is when you become aware that your thoughts have strayed from your breathing. Rep number two is pulling your attention back to the present moment. And every time you do that, you're actually building your brain's ability to stay focused and not get carried away or hooked by your thoughts.
Very cool. So mental gym with Dr. Chris Friesen. I like it. So basically what you're saying is that your brain, when you have a thought, instead of accepting it as concrete fact, objective truth, you're going, okay, this is subjective. This is something that I am feeling, but that doesn't necessarily mean that this is reality. This is something in my control that I can change. And when you acknowledge that, you're creating some wiggle room almost for you to change your mental state.
That's right.
So I was talking with you earlier before the podcast, and it's my understanding that there's actually things that are available that you can go out and buy that can measure these states of your brain.
Yes, and this, I'm glad you brought that up because one of my background, of course, is neuropsychology, and so I have a big interest in the brain. And there is something called neurofeedback, which has been around for a long time, and we could do a whole hour just talking about that.
Sure.
But there is now, because of the speed of our iPhones, our smartphones, our iPads and tablets and laptops, we can actually buy consumer-grade models of these and use them. So one example is Muse, M-U-S-E. It's actually a company in Toronto. And these guys have made a pretty simple but highly effective sensor. It's an EEG sensor. So EEG measures brainwave activity. Electroencephalography is what it's referred
okay.
to. And what we can do is, and I'll give you an example. So I work with a professional golfer right now. And one of the things we know from research with EEG in athletes, especially sports that involve shooting, like archery, and also golf. And what we know is when these athletes make their best shots, let's say, there's a certain brainwave pattern that occurs. So essentially when you're getting ready for a shot, let's say in golf, you're picking, you know, your iron, and you're looking down and trying to determine the wind and the different angles, your brain goes into a beta state, which is a thinking state. Right now, we're both in a beta state. That's a faster brainwave state. It means we're thinking. It's measuring the cortex or the outside of our brain. And when we're in that state, when we do a shot, actually, the research shows that these guys tend to miss shots more often. What happens is, that's great. You need to go in a beta state to determine what are you going to do. And then when you get up to putt, let's say, you need to quiet the brain. And essentially, you put your brain into an alpha state. Alpha is like the default mode of the network. It's not exactly the same, but it's a state, it's an idling state, it's a non-thinking state, and it is a present state. So in other words, the brain sort of turns off, gets quiet, and you do what you're trained to do. Because essentially what gets in the way is our overthinking.
So next one is from Jordan. She's a kickboxer, and she wants to know, how do you deal with adrenaline dumps? Because what she was saying in her question is, when she's in competition, she'll have this big adrenaline dump, and then she feels spent, feels like there's nothing left in the tank, and then it becomes difficult to remain mentally focused enough to stay a few steps ahead of your opponent, to anticipate, and so you kind of get put in this reactionary mode where you're not really taking control of situations like you need to in order to win. So what do you do about that?
That's something that comes up a lot, and I do work. Right now, I'm working with a high-level kickboxer, and I do work also now with a lot of high-level Olympic wrestlers. And, very cool. And I've worked with MMA as well in the past. So adrenaline dumps is a huge problem. And it's a great, great question because this is very common in athletes, especially when you have a big event. So one thing I would say, though, is what you want to do is actually prevent the adrenaline dumps in the first place. So adrenaline dumps, just so people understand what we're talking about, this means you get into a competition, usually a bigger competition. It's not going to practice. This is going into a big competition.
So when the stress is on, pressure's high.
That's right. High pressure, high stress. And essentially, you just gas out, they call it as well. So in other words, you just run out of energy. You have this huge surge of adrenaline, usually at the very beginning, and then you run out of energy, and then you are basically running on nothing. So in sports where you have to make weight, like MMA, wrestling, kickboxing, I think also there are weight classes, so I think that's also an issue. What can happen is your body is often very depleted of nutrients and glycogen, which is the form of energy we use in our muscles. And we have to, you know, the athletes have to bring their weight down to make weight, and then they have to carb up to get their stores back up. But the problem is you're not performing at your peak, so your body has got limited stores. You're also extremely low body fat usually at that point, and so your body uses body fat to produce energy when it's out of everything else. So there's a lot of things that happen that make adrenaline dumps problematic, especially in sports where you have to make weight, like combat sports. So again, I would say that the main thing I would look to do is try to prevent them in the first place. So what happens, though, is your people are going into these competitions quite activated or anxious, which is normal. And I have a lot of recommendations for these sorts of situations. One is, once you're, let's say, right about to compete, you want to have a certain mindset when it comes to, let's say, your anxiety. You want to accept anxiety. You want to be happy it's there. Because a lot of athletes come to me and say, listen, I know there's a wrestler from Russia, and he basically goes into competition. He has no anxiety whatsoever, and he performs great. At least that's what he looks like on the outside. But the reality is, you want anxiety. There's something called the Yerkes-Dodson Law. Essentially, long story short, it's been replicated a million times. And what we know is, when our activation or anxiety levels are moderate, we perform at our best. When they're high, we underperform. And when it's low, we underperform. It's an inverse U.
That surprises me. Yeah, I always assumed, like you said, that when you go in like a robot and you have no emotion, that you would be at your peak.
And that's what most people coming to see me would like to be in that state, when actually I have to tell them, no, that's actually the wrong state.
Okay.
So if you think about it, of course, where that medium level of activation or arousal or anxiety is will depend on the sport. So if you're going into a combat sport, that curve's going to be pushed to the right, in other words, higher than golf. But within that sport, you have to have some level of arousal. So essentially, when you're too high, we all know that can be a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens with adrenaline dumps. People are going in with very high levels of anxiety. Arousal causes muscle tension. When muscle tension is there, you underperform. The fluidity of your movement is reduced, for example.
So you're like stiff, kind of.
That's right. And you can see this in a lot of, if you watch any MMA on television, a lot of people who are, you know, competing for their first time or in the first few minutes of a match, people look a little stiff.
Like when the announcers say, oh, he's getting loosened up, he's getting comfortable or whatever.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, of course, there's the issue of some people aren't warmed up, but these guys are warming up for like sometimes more than an hour in the back. It's not that they're physically not warmed up. That's not the case.
It's a mental thing, like you were
it's
saying.
It's mostly okay. Mental, I would assume. But once you're in competition, you want to say, let's say you're feeling some butterflies. And what you don't want to do is say, oh God, I'm feeling nervous, this is bad. What happens then is your body, it's a feedback loop, your body will become, and your brain will become more nervous because you're interpreting these sensations as a bad thing. However, if you feel those sensations and you say, aha, this means I'm amped, I'm pumped, I'm ready, I'm excited. As soon as you label those feelings as in these positive ways, your brain will basically use that energy, because that activation and anxiety is a form of energy, and that you can ride the lightning or you can get struck by the lightning.
I like that. That's mm-hmm. a good comparison. Mm-hmm. So going back to what you said earlier, it's about kind of distancing yourself from the negative emotion, reframing it in a positive way, mm-hmm. and then using that to your advantage.
That's right. It's what you don't want to do is fight the emotion. I call it the whack-a-mole problem. So you ever been to the fair and you have the game where the little mole comes out of the hole and you bang him on the head, then he comes out of another hole and you bang him on the head?
I just cheat and I use my hand.
Oh, okay. That's one way to do it. But essentially, and I may have stolen this example, I'll be honest. I don't remember where I even got it. I might have made it up. I don't know. So essentially, the mole represents your thoughts and your feelings. And what people tend to do is when they have negative thoughts and feelings, they try to squash them. But what happens is the mole just pops up somewhere else. So the feelings and thoughts don't go away if you purposely try to squash them. Remember I said earlier, you need to accept your thoughts because remember, your brain is a thought-generating machine. Like when you meditate, you don't get mad when you have thoughts or your thoughts stray. That's good. Your brain is supposed to do that. You accept them. And as soon as you accept them, let's just say the mole, he just wants to know what the weather's like, but you never give him a chance. You keep whacking him and he keeps coming out another hole and you whack him again. You just need to let him come up for a few seconds, check out the weather, say hi. He just wants to be heard, wants to be seen, wants to be accepted. You allow him to be there and we're good. And he doesn't come out again. And he may come out again. If he does, it's okay. Let's say you feel tension in your stomach. Let's say your legs shake. Let's say your whole body stiffens up. Your brain interprets that. You interpret that as a negative thing. Oh, this is bad. But of course, you can also do things to reduce the level of arousal or activation in your body as well. And there's a whole bunch of things we can do. So it's kind of a mixture of those two things. You need to train yourself to be able to control your physiology to some extent. But then when it comes to time, you allow it to be there. And if you have, let's say you're 2 hours before a competition, it's really bothering you, and at this point in time, you need to rest. Well, then this is when it's a great idea to pull out some of these strategies, whether it's something called progressive muscle relaxation, whether it's mindfulness meditation using, let's say, an EEG app, or just using nothing, focusing on your breathing. And there's something else called heart rate variability training. It's a form of biofeedback, which, again, biofeedback means you're looking at getting feedback of physiological sensations and then controlling them. And that's actually got a lot of research, and almost everyone I work with, we do that. And I call the poor person's version of it is just diaphragmatic breathing. One example, let's say progressive, I'll give you the short version.
Sure.
You can Google any of these things and you'll find probably great.
Yeah, I'll put links up to these things
sure.
as well.
Yeah. So let's say progressive muscle relaxation is very simple. What you do is, let's say you're sitting down relaxing, but you're not feeling relaxed, you're feeling muscle tension, because one way our body expresses anxiety activation is muscle tension. And especially in athletics, it's problematic if it's too high. So what you would simply do is you breathe in for about 5 seconds and flex a particular muscle, not all the way, let's say 50% in terms of flexing a muscle. Breathe in as you're flexing through your nose, breathe out through your mouth, and relax, release the tension in your muscle. Essentially what happens is when your muscle is flexed and then relaxed, the level of electrical activity in the muscle goes down relative to the baseline. So what that means is if I measured your muscle, let's say I measured your quadriceps right now, let's say it's giving off, I'm not going to throw any technical terms, let's say the rating or the reading is 5. And so then I get you to flex, it goes to 25. And then I tell you to blow out and relax, it usually go down to let's say 4. So what, and we know this from stretching as well, if you are about to stretch a muscle, if you actually put some resistance first for the first, let's say, 5 seconds, and then you stretch, you get a deeper stretch.
What's the name of that technique again?
Progressive muscle relaxation, or PMR, we call it.
PMR, progressive muscle relaxation.
We use this clinically for anxiety clients, and of course, it's really big with athletes. So I'll give you an example. The kickboxer that I'm working with, this is something that comes up, and right, besides doing this formally for about 15 minutes, going through every major muscle in the body, and doing it this way, what he can do is, you know, he's right about to go. He'll feel, once you do this a number of times, you start to learn where in your body you're holding muscle tension. And you'll.
So hold on, I just want to interrupt for a sec. Yeah. So this can actually be a phenomenon that's isolated to certain muscles or certain muscle groups. It's not necessarily a whole body experience.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And what you're doing is when you train yourself on this, in other words, you know, I would never just do this on the day of competition. You need to practice. It's like learning to stick handle in hockey. You don't learn to stick handle in a game situation. You have to be able to stick handle first with nobody trying to take the puck off you, right? And this is a Canadian thing. And so essentially, you need to practice when you're not stressed at all. And what you're doing as well with progressive muscle relaxation is when you're flexing the muscle, you're focusing all of your attention on that muscle and the feelings it has. What does it feel like? And then when you blow out and release the muscle, you focus again and you're noticing the differences. And so what you're doing is training your brain's ability to be able to determine what the difference feels like between a muscle that's overly contracted or tense and a relaxed muscle. So eventually when you get really good at this, you can be standing in a grocery store line and just with your brain scan your body and go, I'm holding tension right now in my lower back. And then what you can do is isolate that back, flex that back muscle because you've already been practicing, breathe in and then breathe out and relax it a little bit more. And so this kickboxer guy, for example, he notices it in his arms. So what he does is he's right, the kickboxing matches are like 2 minutes long. They're very short, at least this type of kickboxer that I'm working with. So what he does is he will basically breathe in, flex his arms, 50%, because you're not trying to work out your arms, but you're trying to get most of the muscles flexed. You breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, and then he shakes his arms. And it just brings...
Loosens you up and lowers that level of anxiety.
And also, that's right. And what your brain does, because your brain's always scanning your body, if it notices, hey, my arms are relaxed, there must be no threat.
I think the term you said earlier was like you're biohacking almost. You're taking advantage of that hard wiring to make your body and your brain do things that you want it to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the key takeaway there too that I noticed is you mentioned this can be used just in daily life. This isn't necessarily only for people that are under a lot of stress, anxiety, or in high performance situations. This is for anybody who's feeling tension just in day-to-day life.
Exactly. Very cool. All of these things... there is very little difference. I mean, there are, of course, differences, but in terms of the biohacks that we're talking about, these are all good for everybody. There are some people who have almost no stress or very little stress, so maybe those techniques wouldn't be that useful. But most people in our society today experience a lot of stress.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. A really popular term these days is biohacking. Can you give everybody a brief rundown? What exactly is biohacking?
So yeah, biohacking is a trending word these days. I'm not even sure where it came from. I love the term because it really describes my style, both of working on myself and also working with clients. So essentially, my understanding of what people mean when they say biohacking is that you are learning about the body and doing things in your day-to-day life that actually enhance what the body does naturally. That's probably the easiest definition I can think of.
Do you have two or three things that are really common or really useful when it comes to biohacking that the average person can put into place?
Yeah, so I think we mentioned earlier about stress, being an issue not only in sports but in everyday life. So one of the things that I like in terms of biohacking for stress is what they call diaphragmatic breathing or heart rate variability training. And heart rate variability training is actually quite complicated. Essentially, though, what this means is you would breathe at a certain pace, approximately 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, about 6 breaths per minute. Research has shown for a long time now, and it's been replicated many times, that those when you're breathing at that rate, something called the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the relaxation and anabolic system within the body, kicks in. Just for reference, the sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight system. And when we breathe in, actually, our heart rate, our blood pressure, everything goes up. And that is caused by the sympathetic nervous system. So these systems are going all the time. When we breathe out, the parasympathetic nervous system kicks in. Our blood pressure goes down, our heart rate goes down. When you are going through day-to-day life, often we have the sympathetic nervous system being dominant. In other words, we're stressed. And so the simplest thing to do is to breathe diaphragmatically. I call it, other people have called this slow and low breathing. What that means is you're not taking the deepest breaths possible. You're breathing relatively normally, but you're breathing through your nose very slowly for 5 seconds in, breathing out through your mouth again very slowly for 5 seconds. And there are some apps for this that are free. So one that I recommend to patients and clients is something called My Calm Beat. It's one word. It's MyCalmBeat. It's very simple. It's free. I'm pretty sure it's on the Android. It's definitely on the iPhone products. And it's essentially a timer. It goes ding, tells you to breathe in, dong, tells you to breathe out. So you don't have to count in your head. It's very simple. And that's the cheapest way to do it. Heart rate variability training is the same idea, but fancier. You have a special ear clip. These things, we can put a link to these.
I'd love to.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. One's called Inner Balance. It's called HeartMath is a company. M-Wave is the handheld device. Inner Balance is the device that works at this point only with iPhone products. I have no affiliation with iPhone. And essentially it measures your heart, what's going on with your heart. And you can see the immediate biofeedback, the feedback from your iPhone or your iPad or your laptop in real time. And so you want to increase heart rate variability, which is very complicated. I won't go into it too much. But when you breathe at this rate, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, or 6 breaths per minute, your body goes into a more balanced state between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So people tend to feel quite relaxed. So what I do with most athletes, the problem with most people, they'll say, listen, I don't have time. When am I going to do this? Of course, this doesn't take a long amount of time. So what I say is, well, I understand that feeling of not having enough time in the day. So the great thing about this is you can add it to your daily routines. So one example, and I all do this myself. I try not to recommend things that I can't do myself. So one is I put the MyCalm Beat on for at least the first 5 minutes when I drive in my car. And I'll be honest, I've done this so long now that I don't even have to count anymore in my head. So I don't even need the
app. You just have the rhythm down.
I've associated, of course, the psychologist in me, the behaviorist in me says, I know when I get into the car, I automatically start to breathe that way, unless I'm with someone and we're talking. So that way I know at least once or twice a day, I'm going to get in. And I'll do it the entire time. So I'll listen to audiobooks, I'll listen to music, or I'll listen to nothing. And I am practicing, I'm increasing my heart rate variability, and I'm breathing in that way. The other way is when you watch television. So what you can do is, especially when you first start, you put the one earbud in your ear, and you put the volume relatively low, so as long as you can hear it, and you breathe in when it goes ding, you breathe out when it goes dong, and you watch TV. At first, it'll seem a little bit awkward, but you are getting a workout in your nervous system. It's called increasing vagal tone. The vagus nerve is the nerve that controls a lot of these things, the sympathetic, parasympathetic, really the parasympathetic side of things, which affects your organs. You digest food better. Let me give you a real fast example. I worked with a very high-level wrestler who would go into competition, very high-level competitions, and feel like they could not digest food, as if they had a brick in their stomach. And what's happening is when you're quite anxious, you're sympathetic, or your anxiety system is going, your fight or flight system is going, your body diverts energy and blood away from the gut because it needs to put it in the muscles to protect it so you can fight or flight. Digesting and growing, like the anabolic system, is just not a priority. So what happens is you need to, if you breathe in this way, you automatically turn on the parasympathetic nervous system and blood goes to your gut. You start to digest food. And this can cure a lot of gut problems. And there's a lot of research with kids. For example, in California, there's a big researcher there who they had, I can't remember all the numbers now, but essentially they had a lot of kids who went to gastroenterologists who were missing school, and the gastroenterologist couldn't find what was wrong because they were having stomach problems. They would do 5 weeks of, it was really heart rate variability training, which is very similar, like I discussed, and about 85% were back to normal. Because a lot of these...
That's impressive. Yeah, that's really impressive, actually. Related.
Yeah.
Kind of bouncing around here a little bit, but there was something we talked about before the podcast, and I want to make sure we revisit that. It was how to maintain your own values and beliefs and maintain focus on the path you want for yourself, rather than becoming reactive when faced with all the opportunities and options and information in the digital age. So what tips do you have for people on how to do that and how to remain centered when so much and so many people are trying to pull you away from that?
You know, life is always a work in progress. There's never this ideal perfect state you're going to achieve, and always accept that it's a battle. One of the things we've talked about is mindfulness meditation, and what that allows us to do is to become more aware of our thoughts and feelings and reactions and emotions for what they really are. They're temporary states that are not necessarily 100% accurate. So remember, we talked about putting space between ourselves and our thoughts. For example, labeling, I'm having the thought that. So to be able to notice, let's say, I call it being seduced. So when you you know, walk around, downtown. There's lots of stores trying to sell you things, of course, on television advertisements. You know, I'll be honest, I every year or two, I get seduced by fancy cars. I don't have a fancy car, but a fancy car is like a Lexus. And then I fall into this seduction trap. I see a commercial. It looks fancier. I have a Camry hybrid. And it's
I drive a Hyundai too. So
yes, so it works really well. They're very reliable, great cars. Yeah. Hyundai and Toyota. And essentially, you know, I fall victim to that. But I have to remind myself, what are my values and what are my goals?
I love that. That's great.
Do I really need this? And also, being able to realize, hey, I'm feeling seduced right now.
Yes.
As opposed to
separating
just
that,
accepting the emotion of attraction as a fact. No, I'm putting some space, which is part of mindfulness. You put a space between yourself and the feelings of attraction. And by simply labeling them as what they are, I'm feeling attracted to this commercial, and I'm feeling the urge to Google YouTube videos of this new Lexus hybrid car. I would say I would write down my goals. Stephen Covey talks about having a mission statement, which is very similar to what I'm talking about. Like, who do you want to be? What are your different roles in life? How do you want to be as a father? How do you want to be as a husband? How do you want to be as an employee? How do you want to be as a friend? And, you know, what do you want people to think about you, or how do you want to be in those situations? Which taps into your values. You got to know your values, because, like I said, you're going to get seduced all day long.
Yes,
by
definitely.
Fires, little fires you feel like you have to put out. You want to get to a position where you're making decisions on a moment by moment, day to day, week to week basis, based on your values and not on your immediate feelings. So, for example, when I work with some athletes, that competition, let's say the Olympic trials are 6 months away, but they're in hardcore training mode, so they have to get up at 4 a.m. before they go. A lot of these people have real jobs, right? So they got to go to their real job, and but they need to train. Let's say it's a rower, so they got to get up really early to go rowing. We have to go to work. We have to get up early. The alarm goes off. You don't want to get up. And so our brains are, you know, not really functioning at their capacity at that point in the day when you first wake up. And so sometimes what I'll have them do is I'll recommend that they have their goals, like written out or on a cork board right there, so they can look on their phone. Their alarm goes off and it tells them, you can write in now, you know, on your alarm what you want it to say. And it could say Olympic gold medal. And
that's a powerful statement.
It is. Or let's say your goal is to pay off your mortgage and you hate your job, but you've decided you're going to stick with this job for now. You don't want to get up, but your alarm goes off, says pay off, goal is to, by this date, pay off my mortgage.
Rise and grind, right?
That's right. It'll give you that boost, because that's the time when your motivation is at its lowest. And so you need to basically make your decisions based on your values and goals, not in your transient feelings. So the example is also when people who are trying to exercise and they're having a hard time motivating themselves to do this. We know from research this works really well. I know from experience as well. We say, listen, you cannot exercise today, no problem, but I would like you to go for 5 minutes. Exercise for 5 minutes and then make a decision. Invariably, nobody decides they don't want to exercise. The hardest part is getting yourself there, and we make all these negative predictions about how hard it's going to be. And the reality is those negative predictions are usually blown out of proportion. Then we do it and it's not that bad.
Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And again, if you could just let people know one more time where they can find you.
Yeah, so my Twitter feed is at FriesenPerform. FriesenPerform is one word, FriesenPerform, perform. And my Facebook is Friesen Sport and Performance Psychology. And of course, my website is FriesenPerformance.com. And that's where people can find me.
And who should contact you? Like, what kind of people are you working with? Who can you help?
I mostly work with what I define as high achievers. And that could mean a lot of things. So I don't care whether, you know, what your job is, whether you're an athlete or not. I'm interested in working with people and helping people who really want to take their life to the next level. It doesn't matter. As long as you have some goals and you're highly motivated and that's something that you're interested in, I do this on the phone, on Skype.
I was going to say, it's not just local around Toronto,
right?
and this kind of area in Canada. You're working with these people all over.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. So that's the great thing about technology now.
Yeah, no kidding. It takes the boundaries right off this stuff.
Completely does, which is great.
Excellent. Dr. Chris Friesen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, and we'll see you all next week.
Thank you.